Good evening and welcome to another edition of Darkness Radio here on 100.3 FM, Newstalk 100.3 FM. And we're just waiting for Dave to get on the line.
I was like,
You can talk, Melly. It's okay.
Okay, I know, but I'm watching you.
Hold on,
being
just
on
a
the
second.
Phone. And here we are live on air and we're trying to get a hold of Dave. So I was just trying to figure out what's going on. We have a fax number instead of
We had a fax number, so I get to talk to a fax number for about 5 minutes. Let's, on your end, let's bring up Mr. Schrader.
Okay.
But, he's much better to talk to than a fax machine.
That was my fax machine impersonation. Was that pretty good?
That was spot on.
I was going to say, you brought me right back to high school and college there, giving me the wrong number there, princess.
Sorry about that.
Yeah.
It's been a long day. What can I say? I was just out in Chattanooga, Tennessee, at the Old South Pittsburgh Hospital, filming our newest episode of Paranormal Challenge, and then raced from the end of filming all the way up to Atlanta, Georgia, where I'm at the Beyond the Veil Conference, or Through the Veil Conference. I'm so horrible at the name of this one. And I'm here for the next couple of days, so it's great times, and sorry I gave you the wrong phone number.
It's okay. It was a little alarming when I started calling and nobody was answering, and I thought, this will be interesting.
So you're missing the cold.
I'm here now.
You're missing the cold weather we're having.
Yeah.
I am not missing it at all.
It's
actually
crazy.
It is 987 degrees here in Atlanta and in Tennessee. And I am sitting comfortably in my room with the air conditioning set to 50.
That's too cold.
Trying to keep cool. So I would be happy to have Minnesota weather here. It's brutal.
It's supposed to hit that 50 mark tonight here.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, I'm telling you.
So it's Friday night. We are 1 week away from the premiere of the Travel Channel's new hit TV series. I'm using my psychic abilities to guess that.
Boy, are you ever.
Paranormal Challenge, which airs next Friday night, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific, 8 p.m. Central. And we're still looking for a location to show it so that we can have everybody out. Unfortunately, they rented out Studio C at our radio station for a wedding. Believe it or not, somebody's getting married at a radio station.
And one of the locations that I was helping to chase down said no. And I can't believe they did.
Unbelievable.
Because they are right. They are so, I won't mention the name, but they are so right down our alley. It's ridiculous.
Well, that's all right. We'll find another close little place. So keep tuned next week, folks. I'll be making mentions probably Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday next week. We will find a nice little bar location to do a screening of the episode and hope that you'll be able to come on out and join us and have a good time and watch the episode along with us. And I'll have some cool little prizes and gifts and books to give away. But we'll give you more information as the week progresses if you'd like to come out and do a viewing of the first episode of Paranormal Challenge, which takes place at Rolling Hills Sanitarium in East Bethany, New York. That episode airs next Friday, so mark it down on your calendars and make sure to add us on Facebook and Twitter, and you'll be able to keep up with all of our cool updates.
And who's the chief judge?
Pardon me?
Who is the chief judge?
The chief judge is a roguishly handsome paranormal radio show host that goes by the name of Dave Schrader.
Oh, that's what I heard.
Up and coming new young lad, I think. But
never heard of him.
No, that's all right. Yeah. Listen, it's Friday night, the night of supernatural news with our supernatural news correspondent, Tim Dennis. But Tim, I got kind of a cool scoop.
Uh-oh.
Do you mind if I go first with a story tonight?
Sure, go ahead.
I'll try to get through this. It's a press release, and this is pretty exciting stuff. I actually got an email from Christopher Quarantino. And you'll understand why this is kind of important for us to break on the show, since we are your home for the best in paranormal talk radio 5 nights a week. Are you ready for this story?
No. Well, go ahead.
I'm hanging on.
I'm going to do my best to buzz through it. All Amityville right. Horror Kid challenges movie giant. U.S. Army veteran and Amityville haunting survivor Christopher John Quarantino is taking a stand. Quarantino is formerly known as Christopher Lutz, one of the three children of George and Kathy Lutz. The Lutz family lived through what became known as the Amityville Horror. Now, 43 years old, Christopher has read the recent news releases put forth by film companies Hannibal Classics and the Weinstein Company. The companies announced new sequel movies, each taking a stab at their own versions. Hannibal, the first to make public its intent, is developing Amityville Legacy in 3D. Not to be outdone, a week later, Bob Weinstein, in his joint deal with Miramax and Dimension, announced at Cannes Film Festival that his company is moving forward with the new movie Amityville Horror, The Lost Tapes, to be released in theaters January of 2012. Well, Bob Weinstein said, "We're thrilled to return to the mythology of the Amityville Horror with a new and terrifying vision that will satisfy our existing fans and also introduce an entirely new audience to this popular haunting phenomenon." Jason Blum, who produced the Paranormal Activity films, which have grossed close to $400 million worldwide, is set to produce. Blum is quoted by Variety saying, "I'm thrilled to be working with Bob to reinvent one of the all-time great horror franchises, and I think this new installment will really hit home with a new generation of moviegoers." Christopher John, who maintains the haunting was real, yet very different from how it was been portrayed to the public, has this to say in response to the announcements. "They want to reinvent the story. A whole new generation won't know what really happened, just as those who don't know who have followed this story for the last 35 years. The time has come for me to set the record straight. A fresh look from an alternate perspective, through the eyes of one of the children who peered out of those iconic quarter-round windows, an eyewitness to the actual events that occurred in the Amityville house and what followed. Therefore, I'm calling out the Weinstein brothers, Bob and Harvey, and Hannibal Films, who have already begun making the next movie sequels to the story that should have died so long ago, the Amityville Horror, to these companies who are bowing down to the golden calf, milking the story one more time, aligning themselves with the top horror writers and producers in the business. I say this, as what you do, you are good. But when it comes to Amityville and what happened after, I can tell you a creepier story than you. I am challenging you to a contest. The contest should be judged in the vein of American Idol, where the public casts their vote to decide the outcome and ultimate winner. The specific categories to be judged should be the very thing your audiences so desire. The best stories of all time are what they are because of the very things I'm challenging you in. The specific categories are as follows. You keep it realistic, I'll keep it honest. Thought-provoking, genuine chill-producing, shocking jumps don't count, psychologically impacting. If you choose to accept this challenge, do so publicly. I await your answer. The public is invited to follow along as I face the demons of my past and the movie giants of today by logging on to AmityvilleHorrorChallenge.com and by liking the challenge on Facebook.com. And then there's a lot of crazy asterisks and things after that. I'm sure you can find a Facebook link at AmityvilleHorrorChallenge.com, or just look up Amityville Horror Challenge on Facebook and see if you can find it. With just over 7 months until the Weinstein Miramax Dimension film is set to release on January 27th, 2012, Quarantino has a lot of work to do to present his story in a book. He is seeking a writing coach and a publisher. Christopher feels it is important that he author the book personally and will take full responsibility for the truthfulness and accuracy of its content. More information will be forthcoming at his website whether or not the companies accept the horror challenge. In a rare comment from any of the Lutz children, Christopher, at the time of the 2005 Amityville Horror remake released in theaters, said, "George Lutz brought the troubles on himself and our family by dabbling in the occult. It wasn't just the house that was the problem. That's why it followed us." So, that's an actual press release sent to me directly from Christopher Lutz, one of the three children of the Lutz family there. So, it's intriguing. I don't know. Again, what's your take, Tim? You think people are going to be open to a contest version to see which version they'd like to see?
I think we're bordering on hokey now.
Well, with that, I might agree. You know what? But I think it's a great idea for him to try to raise the awareness. Because, again, why are we reinventing horror movies when there are so many fantastic stories out there that could be told?
Why did he change his name, his last name?
You know, I'm not sure. I'm sure it's probably to have divorced himself from the name Lutz and all of the news hounds and people that were chasing after him. Plus, I think his mom got remarried. I believe she divorced George Lutz and did end up getting remarried.
Well, so, you know, I think we're getting a little towards towards the Hokie here. And I understand what you're saying about remakes. In fact, I do have a story about a remake here in the news tonight. But there's no originality left in Hollywood. That's why. You've got all these kids who have grown up on these horror movies. Now they're writers, and they can't think of anything better than to respin the tales that they had before.
No, you know what? I don't think it's the writers' problems, honestly. I think that Hollywood is too afraid to make a bold new step. That's why independent films like Paranormal Activity rocketed, because it came out of the blue. You know, Blair Witch did the same thing, what, 10 years ago, 12 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
And they took a shot, and they did it, and can show that they can make a very good movie with a very small budget, and $400 million worldwide for Paranormal Activity 1 and 2. And I think the majority of that was from Paranormal Activity 1.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But, if you're going to plumb the depths, I mean, first of all, the movie that came out, what, a year, year and a half ago, Haunting in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
They went in, they fleshed out a story from the very popular Discovery Channel. Was it Discovery Channel?
I think so.
Yeah, Discovery Channel.
The Haunting.
Yeah, and they did a Haunting in Connecticut, and actually, they didn't stick very close to the original story. They kept the bare bones minimum on there, and that was because, I guess, of legal issues with the real story. But I know that they're busily filming the follow-up, A Haunting in Georgia, which, you know, we've had the lovely Weirich family on our show before, and they've got an amazing story to tell, and I'm excited to see that coming out. And I think they're doing it as a trilogy, A Haunting in New York, which was the other special that they did regarding this. But I think that I would much rather see real stories and have new stories kicked around like this that are being done. And, you know, yeah, if you're going to revisit Amityville, why not go get a fresh perspective from survivors of this? And they should have Christopher under contract by now anyway, I would think, you know, to kind of dig through his brain and get the story. And, you know, hopefully some smart independent producer out there is going to see this and take a shot at it.
Well, maybe. Maybe.
All right. Well, I know I normally don't jump in with the stories. Thanks for allowing me to do that. But I thought it was important since, you know, we are a paranormal show, and one of the surviving children of the Amityville horror wrote to me specifically and asked me to have this read on the news tonight. So, Christopher, done as promised, and good luck to you, sir. Keep us in the loop and let us know. And when you're ready to tell your story, we'd love to have you on the show. Mr. Dennis.
Well, before we go anywhere, I got to let you know, while you've been gone, Mally was actually offered a film by Hollywood as well, a paranormal film. It's called A Blonde Gets It in the End, and it's produced by Vivid Entertainment.
Nice.
And it just so happens that gosh, I don't think she's going to take the role, but just figured I'd throw that out there.
What the heck?
I don't think that that's what they meant when they said the other side, Mel.
Oh, no. See, it's
thank you. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Tip your waiters and waitresses. Tim and I will be back Monday night.
But Mally won't.
Whoa.
All right, so...
So,
let's progress with the strange and supernatural news from all around the world. Where are we starting tonight, Mr. Dennis?
We go to Mars, by gosh.
Really?
Yep, where a self-described armchair astronaut claims to have found a base on the planet Mars using a satellite imaging map. He thinks the base could have been made by aliens. Of course, who else would have made it?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
You know, the video...
Silly, redundant.
Exactly. The video David Martin has uploaded to YouTube has been viewed more than 850,000 times. He says the 750-foot by 150-foot cylinder-like structure that he zoomed in on using Google Mars, because Google is everywhere now.
Google Mars.
I know. Looks like it's made for people to inhabit. In the video, Martinez says he assumes people live in the cylinder or have lived in it. He named it, too. He says the shape is Biostation Alpha, or BSA. By the way, they'll pat you down on your way over there.
Sure.
Yep. Expert told Space.com that the image was most likely caused by cosmic energy interfering with the cameras, not by aliens. Alfred McEwen, a planetary geologist at the University of Arizona, told Space.com, it looks like a linear streak artifact produced by a cosmic ray. Cosmic rays, which are emitted by the sun and other stars, don't make it to Earth because of its magnetosphere. But with space images that are taken outside of our magnetosphere, such as those taken by orbiting telescopes, it's very common to see these cosmic ray hits. You see them on optical images and a lot of the infrared images, too. That video is available, by the way, on YouTube if you...
Shenanigans. I am looking at Google Mars right now.
All right, and?
And I am, let me see, I'm zooming in. I see this structure very clearly. Let me see, zooming in a little more.
Okay, and?
I see a mailbox.
Okay.
and it says Mally Fox. Mally.
I knew it.
I know. I just
aside from
property.
Owning Moon property, you also own Alpha Base Station.
Mm-hmm. My next step, Pluto.
Wow, Pluto. Pluto's no longer a planet, Mal. You've lost your chance.
Well, we're going to name it the Mally Planet.
Pluto's barely a cast member on Mickey Mouse Club anymore. Yeah, much
so
less
sad.
A planet.
So, but they have debunked it, right? They just think that it's some kind of
cosmic rays
that came by.
Yep. Cosmic rays.
You know what? Speaking of cosmic rays, we have, and God help me out with this. We talked to somebody on the show just recently who was talking to us about the sun and these eruptions that take place. What are they called, Tim?
Solar flares.
Solar flares. I like eruptions. Solar flares works. But wasn't his claim that after these major solar flares, within 3 days, all hell has been breaking loose?
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't there just a major solar flare just like a day or two ago?
I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, if you get a chance during the commercial break, pull it up, because I'd like to kind of watch that. He predicted, remember on the show, he said within 3 days of these solar flares, there would be massive earthquakes, tsunamis, horrible weather patterns. And I know they just talked about this huge coronal mass that popped off the sun heading directly towards Earth. So it'll be interesting to see if we do have any more of that. So maybe during the break we can check that out. All right. Where are we going next, Mr. Dennis?
Well, first of all, Your Sun is Erupting is the actual sequel to The Blonde Gets It in the End. So
no.
I just figured I'd throw that in.
Good God.
We're going to Liberty County in Texas. You know, earlier this week, there was a report of a mass grave with about 25 to 30 bodies in it.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a tip from a psychic that led authorities over there. Well, it turns out the psychic who sparked Liberty County to do that search fears that she'll gain attention from it. Liberty County Judge Craig McNair alerts the media that authorities found no dead bodies in a house Tuesday near Hardin when they went to that mass grave, or rather when they went to look for the mass grave. Hunkered down in her trailer in the Texas Panhandle, a grandmother who had a vision that sparked a media circus and police search for alleged mass graves in Liberty County said she is being wronged and fears for children who may never be found. She told the Houston Chronicle by phone Wednesday evening, "This is bad for people who call in a tip for something. They think that they've done a good deed, but it turns out that it turns around on them." The 48-year-old woman who asked only to be identified by her nickname of Angel said she never wanted an attention or any attention and fears the worldwide interest in the case will destroy her life if her identity is known publicly. The woman also agreed to be interviewed only on the condition that she remains anonymous. She said, "I also have children and grandchildren. I'll be bombarded with media and all that. I do not like the spotlight." Angel described herself as a reverend for a ministry that helps the poor and homeless and said that while she is based in Texas, she spends much of her time traveling to do God's work. Sources close to an ongoing investigation confirmed Angel was truthful about her identity as well as that she'd previously shared information with law enforcement agencies in Texas. Angel said she's had visions her entire life, and after confiding with two friends who were having similar visions that three children could be in trouble, she contacted the Liberty County Sheriff's Office on Monday. She strongly denied telling officers that they needed to search for bodies or that anyone was dead. She said, "They did not act on what I told them. My biggest concern is definitely the children. I think they are hungry and thirsty, and they are still alive." The Liberty County Sheriff's Office declined to comment on Angel's accusations late Wednesday.
So the original story was that she sensed a mass grave.
Right, and they went there and found nothing.
And they found nothing, mm-hmm. And then now it's that, oh, there's three kids that need help.
And they're still alive.
Okay, well, that's good.
Yeah.
Now, was it leaked improperly, do we know, or did she really make the claim that it was a mass grave at first?
She made the claim that it was a mass grave at first.
Hmm.
Meanwhile, the sheriff's office said earlier in the day that it had not been able to verify any of the details provided by the tipster, including her name, location, or occupation, according to spokesman Rex Evans of the sheriff's department. And the tip she provided was false, he said. Evans said everything went by the book, even though officials did not know how the tipster had come to learn about the allegedly buried bodies. Evans said she did not specifically go into that. "Not to my knowledge, I do not recall any specific details that she said she saw this or she felt this or she heard this." Officials were searching for the tipster but had made no progress, he said. The woman could face a minimum charge of filing a false report or making false statements, which is a misdemeanor in that county. The tip led to the media frenzy, which drew attention from around the globe amid rumors that a mass grave containing up to 30 dismembered bodies had been discovered. It initially came on Monday when the tipster called the Liberty County Sheriff's Office and reported that there were several bodies of children buried on a property in Hardin. Deputies went to the property and found nothing, but in a subsequent call Tuesday, The tipster redirected officials and offered more details that led them to a home with blood on the porch and the foul odor of rotting flesh in the air. It was not clear how many times officials had spoken with the woman in total, but they did not know after their first conversation with her that she claimed to be a psychic. The blood was from an injury at the residence a few weeks earlier when an AWOL soldier tried to kill himself, and the odor was from a malfunctioning deep freeze full of pork products and maggots. Pork products and maggots, according to officials.
Everything tastes better on a Ritz, Aunt B.
It really does. Officials did not discount her information when she told them she was a psychic, and they instead followed up the tip like they would any other. Upon discovering the blood and odor at the property, deputies coordinated with the Liberty County District Attorney's Office to request a search warrant for the home. They did inform prosecutors that their information came from a woman who claimed to be a psychic, but did note the tip and the suspicious environment at the home. Although Liberty County officials had drawn criticism for their response to the tip, they said the factors at the home had warranted such a search. According to Liberty County District Attorney Michael Little, he says the question is, when you have information of a serious nature like that, people just can't sit on it. He says, you've got to look into it. You've got to try to see if a crime had been committed or not. So there you go.
Yeah, that's got to be a dangerous line for officers to walk on. You know, if you're getting that kind of lead, you got to at least check it out.
Mm-hmm. You would think.
She said she didn't want any attention, but do you think if she had been accurate, she would want attention?
Well, that's a good question.
Yeah. Well, that's why she doesn't want that kind of attention.
I think now she's not wanting the attention because obviously it's negative attention. But I think Mally's got a point. If she'd have been dead on, then, so to speak, then I think she would be singing a whole different tune.
Coming to Comedy Central this fall, the world's worst psychic. Wow.
I think they're here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God love her. At least she did something. She was proactive. You know, if she was picking up something and she didn't say anything, and then 3 weeks from now, three children were found dead, how miserable would you feel?
True. And what are the odds are if someone goes to the house and there's, old pork products
blood on the
porch?
And maybe, maybe she was picking that up and thought it just equated to death. I don't know. I don't know. It's a crazy, crazy world we live in, kids. Crazy world.
Crazy,
all right.
Crazy.
Well, do we have enough time for another story, Mr. Dennis, or should we go to commercial break?
We can do a real quick one, real quick. You know, we had the tragic tornadoes run through Joplin at the end of May there, May 22nd.
Right.
There's a story now coming out on a blog that there are 1,700 people treated for a rapid aggressive fungal infection in their wounds that's causing nerve damage, blindness, brain and lung blood clots, and death. Health officials issued a staff warning about the killer fungus now that at least 9 people have been treated and 3 or 4 have died from due to it. Dr. Uwe Schmidt, an infectious disease specialist at Freeman Health System, said 3 or 4 people with the infection called zygomycosis have died, according to the news leader. Although medical staff knew that the killer fungus was causing serious complications the week after the tornadoes, the situation was kept undercover until Thursday. Still, a close approximation of the number of people infected with the deadly fungus is not being revealed. In the deadly tornado aftermath that destroyed Joplin, Missouri St. John Hospital, Freeman Hospital doctors treated over 1,700 patients, while St. John Hospital doctors treated patients in emergency makeshift facilities at Memorial Hall and Macaulay Catholic High School. Now, the zygomycosis fungus invades underlying tissue, the underlying blood vessels, and cuts off circulation to the skin, causing the area to become black, according to Dr. Schmidt, who says it is very invasive. In fact, head wounds are the most lethal, while the fungus remaining in an arm or leg may have required amputation to save the patient, according to the doctor. Tornado victims wounded near the head have died. As soon as brain tissue started dying, it was too late to save the patient, according to the leader. The real number of victims with the deadly fungus is unknown, as the reportive numbers of cases of reportable diseases are handled by public health department systems. And something interesting to note, if I can find it here real quick.
If I could just mention 2 really weird things about this. First of all, what luck that the doctor who's working on fungus is named Uwe.
Right.
Very true.
And secondly, not trying to diminish the tragedy of this, but how weird is that maybe M. Night Shyamalan was kind of forecasting this with his horrible movie The Happening a few years ago? Wasn't that about plants and fungus taking over people and killing them?
You know, I didn't see it.
You didn't miss much. It was truly probably one of the worst movies ever made. But
I've given up on M. Night.
Plants rebelled against humans and started wiping them out. And it was like it floated on the wind, which, you know, following the tornadoes, all of a sudden all these people have this fungus. Wow. Well, our hearts go out to the people of Joplin as this tragedy continues to unfold with tornadoes and now this brutal fungus. And we hope that hope and pray and lift you up with energy that your town recovers and that the people of your town get a break. We're going to take a quick break right now, and we'll come back with more strange and supernatural news with Tim Dennis, Melanie Fox, and me, Dave Schrader, right here on Darkness Radio on News Talk 100.3 FM.
Welcome back to Darkness Radio, News Talk 100.3 FM. I'm Tim Dennis, the co-hostess with the mostest, Melanie Fox, is in. Say hi, Melanie.
Hello.
You didn't say hi, Melanie.
Hi, Melanie.
There you go.
Well, I want to know the rest of your story, because you said there was something important
in
it.
Past. The moment's passed. Let's bring Dave back up on the phone. Is he there?
Yep.
Okay.
Now, were you guys just listening to that news story?
About
the lady who was brutally attacked by the chimpanzee 2 years ago?
Yes, and got the face transplant.
A full face transplant.
Full frontal, baby.
That is crazy. They're doing full face transplants. Unfortunately, she'll remain blind, but she'll be able to smell, taste, and she'll get off pureed food again. That, to me, is astounding where science is coming on now.
You know, that's not the first one to be done, though.
But they've only done partial face transplants, I thought, in the past.
No, there was one. We actually had a story about 6 months ago on the very first one.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, congratulations. That's great. I'm glad that she's going to regain some quality of life after that amazingly horrible tragedy from 2 years ago. All right. Hey, let me make one more quick mention. I promise, folks, this is going to end after next week. But next Friday on the Travel Channel, brand new TV series called Paranormal Challenge, starring Zach Bagans from Ghost Adventures, Billy Tolley from Ghost Adventures, and yours truly, Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio, will be airing every Friday for the next 12 weeks on the Travel Channel at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern and Pacific. Make sure to check your local listings for times. And next week, we are going to be working on trying to find a location that we can hold a viewing party. If you're interested in doing that, you can email me at dave@darknessradio.com. And as soon as we have information solidified, we will let you know. You can come on out and meet Mally Fox, Tim Dennis, and myself as we do a viewing party for the first episode of Paranormal Challenge, Rolling Hills. Right now, though, we're going to go back to Mr. Tim Dennis with the supernatural news of the strange and bizarre. Tim, where are we off to next?
St. Louis.
St. Louis?
Yeah.
All right. What's going on in St. Louis?
Well, there's a Bigfoot group that is mighty worried about Bigfoot now that the Missouri River has flooded.
Really?
They're on the lookout for Bigfoot. They want to make sure he's safe, that he's not out there trying to swim with the fishes.
So they think that a mythological creature that has survived centuries and eludes human contact can't swim.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, you know, he's a big guy.
I bet he likes ho-hos and Twinkies.
Oh, I bet he does, too.
Go ahead with the story, and then I want to talk about the new show, Finding Bigfoot.
Okay.
I TiVo'd that. Thank you for the text.
Yes.
There's a couple of different Bigfoot stories here, but we'll give you this one first. They haven't seen anything yet, but a group searching for proof of Bigfoot is alert for reports along the Missouri River where they believe heavy flooding could disrupt the legendary creature's normal comings and goings. According to investigator Rachel Luffman with the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, she says, "We're definitely going to keep our eye open for more reports that might come in because the creatures might be a little displaced from all that flooding. They may be venturing into areas where there are more people and more people might be seeing them." Luffman admits her field of research suffers from hoaxes, jokes, and shaky videos, but insists there is something real about this that can't be dismissed. Her own father says, or she says, went from Bigfoot skeptic to believer after attending a nighttime expedition with her in 2009 in the Shawnee National Forest. She says, "We were out there. We went up to a trail and cooked some bacon, hoping that might attract something. And we had done some calls, and on the way down, we had our lights on because it was dark and we had to see. And my dad just happened to turn his head off the trail and saw two huge eyes looking back at him from about 30 feet away." Luffman went on to say, "When I came back, I looked, and with both of our lights shining on this creature, we could see his eyes, the shape of his head. It was just amazing. He took a few steps away from us. He sounded enormous, and he was obviously walking on two legs."
Wait, how does one sound enormous?
Give me time.
Okay.
He says, or she said, with floodwaters rolling down the Mississippi, or rather the Missouri River, Luffman says hikers, campers, and motorists should be circumspect for possible Bigfoot sightings, anything from a road crossing to a face-to-face encounter. She says, do stay calm. Remember that they're not, as a rule, aggressive animals. They're pretty quiet, and they're curious about people. And don't try to shoot it or anything like that. Don't run after it. Just try to stay calm and show it some respect, and you'll have an experience that is incredible. That's according to Ms. Luff.
Do you think the way you know it sounds huge is if it goes, hey, hey, hey? I'm just curious. How do you say something sounds huge?
Someone has a new button.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, anyway, Animal Planet has a new series called Finding Bigfoot. And I got to tell you, I watched an episode, and I'm deeply intrigued. They've got the BFRO, which is a Bigfoot Research Organization.
Thank you for clarifying.
Yes, they are out trying to investigate relatively new sightings of Bigfoot. And I was really intrigued by the show. I thought it was great. They've got, I don't remember all the cast members' names, but there's one guy who looks like Bigfoot, and they kind of refer to him as their Bigfoot. And it's some name like Bubba or something, but... Anyway, the cast was great. The investigations were really impressive. And I'll tell you, for something that I've started to lose faith in, even though I had some kind of an encounter when I was about 10 or 11, 12 years old in Alabama and saw something myself, I still have just, you know, I'm not sure where I come down on the whole Bigfoot theory. But watching them definitely intrigued me again. And I recommend, even if you're not into the Bigfoot stuff, watch the show. It's really well done. And I like the skeptical approach they take. And this next week seems like they're going to get some really interesting, and they said could be some of the most impressive footage. And they were getting some hits on thermal cameras. They were going down a path. They weren't even told to go down this path, and they found a Bigfoot footprints. And so, you know, that's what impressed me and impressed their kind of lead skeptic on the show, because they were like, we weren't even supposed to be down here, so it's not like somebody set up this hoax for us. And, you know, it was a great show. I would say the first episode I watched, I would give it a solid 3 to 3.5 stars.
Hmm.
It's called Finding Bigfoot, and I believe it airs Sunday nights, and I'm sure it's repeated numerous times on Animal Planet. But check it out and take a look. Did you get a chance to see any of it all, Tim?
No, I didn't. I'm waiting for the season finale where they find one and barbecue it. It's going to be on the Food Network.
Oh, my God.
And it's different barbecue sauces, different ways to prepare Bigfoot. It's kind
no.
of tasty.
Would you want to jerk Bert Bigfoot?
Only if he'd let me. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. What's our next Bigfoot story?
Well, this one comes from our friend Eric Altman at the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society.
Okay.
And actually, Eric forwarded this along. It was an actual encounter that had happened this past week.
Really?
And according to it, it happened in... According to Eric, it happened in southwestern Pennsylvania in an area where there was a large number of sightings and encounters reported to the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society in 2009 and 2010. They sent a bunch of pictures with it, so when you get back, you'll have to take a look at it. But they couldn't authenticate the tracks in the pictures real well. But there's a summary of the email from the witness that they received yesterday morning. I'm just going to read a little bit from it. It says, the particular photos in question were taken today at approximately 11:30 a.m. in Fayette County on June 8th. The woman who sent the photos stated that her brother-in-law was out shooting in a remote area with a friend not far from his house. The area is wooded and not far from one of the small towns in southwestern Pennsylvania. He said that when his friend and he arrived at the area, they noticed some deer running out of the woods as if running away from something. Upon walking back into the area, they noticed a very bad odor in these prints that are in these particular photos. In one area, he stated there was a brown, slimy something on the grass. There was only traces of it today. It had resembled algae or pond scum. It's kind of brownish in color. The prints measure approximately 13 to 14 inches in length. The stride between them in one area was approximately 6 feet in length. Most were approximately 2 feet apart. The foot in the photo is the witness's, shoe size women 6.5, so they're not overly large. They seem to come out of the woods at one point, go along the path, appearing to go through a puddle about 3 inches deep of standing water at one point, and disappear as if going off into the woods again. The emailer goes on to say that my brother-in-law, Chris, was able to get down there today. He met with the witness, felt he was believable, stated the witness never believed in Bigfoot, and described the smell very well. Chris saw the tracks, described them as similar to the ones we discovered in Beaver County in western Pennsylvania in February. narrow and long and deep in the ground, long stride between tracks and only four toes. He did get some photos, but was not able to cast them due to a strong thunderstorm that came through minutes after he got there. So,
four toes. What is he, a cartoon Bigfoot?
Well, a little bit. So Eric's going to keep us updated on that. And
well, I like when you have a really compelling witness. And that's what part of the thing I liked about the Finding Bigfoot episode was one of the pieces of evidence that they were able to look at was caught on a police officer's dashboard cam. And the police officer and the ride-along person with him both saw this thing with their eyes, and they caught it on the video camera. Unfortunately, the footage is not great. But to have, you know, a police officer whose career and credibility is on the line, I think that was really impressive. But, wow, it's an interesting story. So there's more Bigfoot sightings popping up all over. Did you have another Bigfoot story for us?
Nope, just those two, and actually we're kind of up against a break right now.
Yeah, well, why don't we take another break? We'll come back. We'll wrap up the show with some more strange and supernatural news from around the world. Got a lot more coming up next week. I hope you guys keep in tune for. We're going to be talking about a pilot who actually died, went to heaven, and came back on Monday. And then on Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to be joined by Dr. Andrew Nickel, who runs the American Institute of Parapsychology. We're going to share two nights with him. He's got so many amazing stories. He was the newest judge on the episode we just shot in Chattanooga, Tennessee on Paranormal Challenge, and he's got some stories we have to hear. Plus, he has a variation of a black-eyed kid story that will set you on edge. That's a guarantee. Stay tuned, though. More news continues right after this on Darkness Radio, News Talk 100.3 FM.
Welcome back to Darkness Radio, News Talk 100.3 FM. Tim Dennis, Mally Fox, and on the phone from somewhere in the sweaty South,
Atlanta, Georgia.
You'll be wrestling at the Georgia Dome there, right? Against Goldberg?
Ladies and gentlemen, yes.
Yeah, I thought so.
I'm out here in Atlanta, Georgia. Let me try that again.
Atlanta, Georgia.
I'm here in Atlanta, Georgia. Maybe I shouldn't have had a couple of drinks before we started the show tonight.
Maybe.
Doing the Through the Veil conference at the lovely Atlanta Hilton. Come on down. You can buy tickets tomorrow if you're interested, and come on in and see a lot of fantastic speakers, including myself. You can find information. It's either at throughtheveil.org or beyondtheveil.org. I am obviously just not that compelled to look it up right now, but that is one of those two websites as I'm sitting in my darkened hotel room looking out over the beautiful town of Atlanta, Georgia, talking to my two best friends and all of you, our listeners. Mm-hmm. Where are we going to go next in the world of supernatural news, Mr. Dennis?
Over to England.
England?
Only, yay! Only in England could he...
Mally, was that space worm?
Oh, close.
Very close.
There you go.
All right, what's over in England?
Zombie invasion.
Ooh.
Oh, all right, let's go back to America. What's going on there?
Only in England could a city council quiz their citizens as to whether they have emergency plans to tackle a zombie invasion. This in a bizarre Freedom of Information request. A concerned citizen, Robert Ainsley, lodged his query on Tuesday asking, "Can you please let us know what provisions you have in place in the event of a zombie invasion?" And then he said, "Dear sir..." Because they're in England.
Mm-hmm.
Having watched several films, it is clear that preparation for such an event is poor, and one that councils throughout the kingdom must be prepared for. The authority has yet to formally respond, but has indicated there are no specific references to zombies in its emergency plans. The Leicester City Council has...
Do you think New York has emergency plans in case King Kong does show up and get loose and climb the Empire State Building?
Let's only open one can of worms at a time, my friend.
Do people not realize these are movies?
Well, that's what this guy cited. He's watched the movies and he's scared. Leicester City Council has 20 working days to answer, but its head of information governance, Lynn Wyeth, took to local radio yesterday to address the issue. She said, "We've had a few wacky ones, but this one did make us laugh." It's one of those questions that you could do a one-liner saying there's nothing specifically in the emergency plan to state a response to a zombie invasion. But she went on to say, "But you could look at it more in depth and say, which parts of the emergency plan could you apply to a zombie invasion, as it would have the same impact as perhaps some other disaster or attack." She told the
King Kong.
Exactly. She told it. Do you think they're ready for King Kong, though?
I think they're more ready for King Kong than zombies.
Hmm. She told the BBC, "If it's specifically about zombies, then I would say, from my recollection of the plan, that unfortunately there's nothing in there saying how we would respond to zombies. they're in trouble. Ms. Wyeth said the council was required by law to respond to all requests made under the Freedom of Information Act. She said, to you, it might seem frivolous and a waste of time, but to different people, it actually means something. There you go.
Yes, very different people.
We,
that would have been awesome. You're just sitting there bored out of your mind.
Do we have any idea if we've got any plan in case polyester jumpsuits come back?
We do, yes.
All right. We do have that effect.
Yep. It's called, you know that memory foam that you get on the old on the beds and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
You line the inside of your pant legs with the memory foam.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps chafing from occurring.
Okay.
That's it. We're just going to prevent chafing.
Okay.
It's what we do.
Polyester pants.
It's like Diddy said with Mace. It's what we do. We're going to Connecticut.
Hey, Connecticut, that's the home of John Zaffis, and star of Paranormal Collector, or Haunted Collector.
Yeah, thanks for remembering the name there, Bucko.
On the Sci-Fi Channel.
Man, he remembers the name of your show. He called us and told us,
he
too.
He didn't talk to me.
No, that's not true.
I know.
He tried calling you, but he got a fax machine, too.
Hi-yo! Poochie. All right, so what's going on in Connecticut?
In Connecticut, more zombies. On June 5th, police responded to a horrified Connecticut resident's complaint that zombies in bikinis were cavorting on a street. It's true. The man placed the call at 5:15 p.m. That's the time zombies do cavort. And said that he was alarmed by the gory bikini girls, the Hartford Courant reported. When police arrived at Matthewson Street in Jewett City, Connecticut, a popular zombie hangout, they discovered that the zombies were models in makeup who were getting ready for a photo shoot. After they were informed of their complaint, the models and photography crew volunteered to move to another street. Josh Eason, one of the photo shoot's organizers, told the Hartford Courant that the photos were taken for a 12-month zombie bikini calendar called the Year of the Dead.
The Year of the Dead zombie bikini calendar.
Yes, sir.
How do we sign up for this?
Well, funny enough, you should mention. No, I'm kidding. I don't know.
Do you know yet or no?
No.
All right, but we'll have to. You'll find that out. We got to update people because I truthfully want a zombie bikini calendar.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Mally, I think you should submit.
Yeah, right.
You should pop into it. We'll do a little makeup on you. We'll pop you in a bikini.
Wait.
Zombify you.
As you're describing this. Okay, go ahead.
Oh, boy.
Now, what should she do again?
Stop.
Well, Mally, we're going to put you in a bikini and make you up to look like a zombie.
We want people to buy the calendar and not be scared.
Wow.
Stop.
See.
All right. Where are we going to wrap this stuff up, Mr. Dennis?
Wrap it up already? We still have like 7 minutes.
Well, no. I just meant where we're going to wrap up the show. Where are we going to go next?
Oh, we're going to Georgetown.
Oh, Georgetown.
Nice. Yep. For a whole month, hundreds of mysterious fires broke out in a 73-year-old widow's house in rural Kellington. You might remember the story from...
Words hard tonight, Tim?
Well, I'll tell you. I'll set you down in front of the story, and we'll see how you do.
All right. So now, let's start from the beginning. Where is this taking place? In Georgetown?
That's just the byline, Dave.
Okay.
We had brought a story to you months ago about a woman who had mysterious fires in her home over in the eastern countries.
Sure.
Over in the Orient. Well, it turns out she's paid a debt of gratitude to a spiritualist who has helped her put out those fires.
Okay.
So the 73-year-old widow, her house out in rural Kellington, because I'm from there and I should know how to pronounce it.
Yeah, right.
When her problem ended, she pledged to come to Penang to thank one of the paranormal experts who came to her aid. The opportunity came when Zainab Suleiman had to travel to Seberang Prai for a wedding. She then went over to the island and stayed for a night just so she could meet up with spiritualist master Ong Kyu Lang. When my misery ended, I made up my mind that I would one day make a trip to Penang and pay her a visit. It is only right, as she had to come all this way to my village to help me, said Zainab in her Kellitonese accent. Try saying that 10 times. Zainab, who lives in a wooden house in Kampung Penembang Bunga, Imas.
Yes. Remember? I love that town. Tell me that town again.
She lives in a wooden house in Kampung Penembang Bunga, Imas.
Yes.
Near Kota Baru. Don't forget it's near Kota Baru. So it's Kampung Penembang Bunga Imas near Kota Baru.
Okay.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'm done for the night.
Yay.
That was great.
See?
I don't think you could do it again. Give me one more shot at it. Where is it close to?
Kampung Penembang Bunga Imas. It's near Kota Baru.
Kampung Penembang Imas.
Kampung Penembang Bunga Imas.
Mm-hmm.
Near Kota Baru.
Ooh-ee, ooh-ah-ah.
Ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang.
That's great. No, so, she's all settled up, and she made amends and said thanks. That's great.
She did. She was plagued.
Good follow-up story. You just wanted to be able to say that town again.
No, I really didn't.
You spent months practicing that town.
I did not.
All right.
Literally pulled it out tonight.
Really?
Yeah.
Put it back, sir. Put it back. Where are we going to go next?
Well, I guess we're done with that one. All right. Yeah.
Oh, is there more to it?
No, that's fine.
I mean, she went. She visited.
This woman lives in an 18-syllable town, Dave. She just wanted her due.
Well, she got her due.
Well, not really.
All right.
She was paying back the debt. There's a story out of Australia that the UFO X-Files have disappeared. No smoking gun document. But the real question is, does anybody care?
I do.
You do? Well, you're one of just a few. In case you missed the little item in the news this week, it appears that Australia's military has somehow misplaced its X-Files, the official records of UFO sightings. After a two-month search, an Australian Department of Defense spokeswoman simply said the files could not be located, and the headquarters air command formally advised that this file is deemed lost. How does this happen? Well, how can documents, some of which previously considered too sensitive for public consumption, just casually vanish?
I don't know.
What seems to have slipped through some of the red tape...
Were they sent to Canpan, Wanam, Panam, Bangam?
That's the wrong name of the town, Dave.
No.
Let's go over it again, shall we? Are you ready? Repeat after me. Kampung.
Okay. Kampung.
Penambang.
Penam. Kampung, Penambang.
Bunga.
Bunga.
Imas.
Imas. Kampan,
No, we're not done. We're not done.
Oh.
Near Kota Baru.
Near Kota Baru.
All right, one more time. Kampung.
Okay. Kampung.
Penambang.
Penambang.
Bunga.
Bunga.
Imas.
Okay.
Near Kota Baru.
Canatuna, Penanteller.
Canatuna.
Bang and Buma in Nima.
You got it.
All right, I knew I could get it.
Yep. After
it took me 6 months like it did you. In your face.
Wow.
Ooh,
wow.
So did you like the little X-Files theme I gave you in the background there?
Yeah, that hurt my ears. Thank you.
So it just vanished. Their files vanished.
Their files vanished. What seems to have slipped through some of the red tape cracks in the story is that the loss of the UFO files, some big ones, has happened before in other countries with no substantial conspiratorial backlash.
Mm-hmm.
According to Nick Pope, who heads up the British government's UFO project, he said, yes, I've lost files. Of course, if you lose any file, obviously it's a mistake. So, yes, Nick Pope has lost files, too. He says if you lose a classified document or file, it's more of an issue. The higher the classification of material, the more stringent the rules and procedures for tracking the whereabouts of the document or material. Same thing has happened in the UK. Just 3 months ago, it was revealed that British files had mysteriously gone missing. Files about a significant 1980 UFO encounter that took place at joint British-American air bases in the UK's Rendlesham Forest. He says, I can understand why ufologists and conspiracy theorists might react to the loss of the files, Pope said, particularly with the Australian story having come after the British story about the Rendlesham files. I can understand why people would say this must be a conspiracy. Pope's 21 years working for the British Ministry of Defense has taught him the way the government bureaucracy works. He says files go missing all the time. If these Australian files were unclassified, I can well understand material being lost, Pope explained. Sometimes material is inadvertently destroyed.
Don't you wish they were the same guys running our student loans?
I know.
Oh, that would be
lovely.
It'd
be great if they could just lose some of those files.
I'd love to get rid of those. I'm not going to lie to you.
All right. How much time do we have here, Mr. Dennis?
Not very much. We're sitting at about a minute and 20 seconds before the
show. All right. Well, thank you all for tuning in. We got a lot of great shows coming up again next week, and we're going to be talking again to a captain, an airline pilot, who actually died and went to heaven, and he's going to come back and tell us his story on Monday night from 11 p.m. till midnight. Then on Tuesday and Wednesday, we're going to be joined by Dr. Andrew Nichols from the American Institute of Parapsychology. He's got a lot to share, some amazing stories, and trust me, folks, he's got a variation on the Black Eyed Kid stories that are going to unnerve you. You may want to wait and listen to that story. We'll put it at the end of the show, so that you can tune in and listen to it in the morning and not be as freaked out when you go to bed. A lot of great stuff coming. And then, of course, next Friday, the kickoff, the premiere episode of Paranormal Challenge on the Travel Channel at 8 p.m. Central, 9 p.m. Eastern Pacific. Check your local listings and times for more information. Darkness Radio, you can hear us here five nights a week, Monday through Friday from 11 p.m. till midnight. And if you miss any of the shows,